Good morning.
Good morning.
I hope you're all excited to be here this morning. I'm excited and nervous, and I got a whole bunch of things going on in me right now, but God is here, and He is the one who's in control of this morning. And more importantly, He's the one who has something that He wants to share with each one of us this morning. A couple weeks ago, when Chuck pulled in here, we surprised him and showed up that evening, and I threw the offer at him, and I said, "Chuck, if you want to speak this Sunday, you're welcome to." He just kind of laughed at me. He didn't realize that I was serious. He thought I was joking. The offer's still there. You can still come up, but no, I appreciate the story or the quote that Howard shared this morning, and what he says about how we protect ourselves, and even as we come, you know, to church here, we protect ourselves, and we protect ourselves from the people around us, and we protect ourselves even from God and what He wants to do and what He wants to speak into our lives. And let our prayer be this morning that He would just tear those things down, tear those walls down, and that we would be vulnerable to Him and open up our hearts and our minds to whatever it is that He wants to share with us this morning. And this theme, this passage actually of Jesus, of Peter walking on the water, has been something that's been on my heart for a long time. I think it was just over a year ago that I actually preached a message on this in a little church in Wyomas. And at the time, I didn't realize what was coming, the next, you know, the what God had in store for my next, for the next year of my life, the changes, the things that He had in store. But as I go back through these past couple of months and I see the changes that He's brought me to do, the things He's brought me to, and the changes in my life, and I realize that He has a plan and He has a purpose in everything, even in the midst of something we don't always necessarily understand what's going on. But He has a master plan behind all of this. And it's not always an easy ride, but He can be trusted. So as we look into this passage this morning, I just want to explore a few questions and a few things, ask some questions about God and about our relationship with God and about what we can expect from God and what can we expect as Christians in our walk. But before we do that, I just want to go, I got the controls here. Here we go. This last summer, I had the chance to go visit my sister out in Costa Rica. And if you've ever been to Costa Rica, one of the big things to do out there are these canopy tours, which are zip lines, and they have, it's a beautiful country with mountains and rainforests and everything, and through these mountains and rainforests, they hang these zip lines, and you get strapped into a harness and hooked up to a pulley on a zip line, and you go cruising across valleys, and probably, I think the longest one we did took us across this valley about 700 meters. We're probably, 300 feet up in the air, zooming across this valley, and I knew we were going to do this as we're going to this trip because it's one of these things you have to do. But if you're like me, you hate heights. You hate jumping off a ledge. You hate falling. The fear of falling is not something that, I don't know, maybe some of you are hobbyist skydivers and things like that, but that's not my cup of tea. And so fortunately, we did this, I think, our third day in, so I could get it out of the way. But before this, I'm just thinking, man, I've got to do this. I know I have to do it. It will probably be really neat and awesome, but I don't want to do this. So we did this. There's the one place we went to has these 11 zip lines you go through. They start off real nice and easy. The first one is probably maybe 50 feet, and you're about 10 feet off the ground. And of course, my heart was pumping then already. And then by the end, we're going across this huge valley, about 700 meters, 300 feet in the air, sailing across this thing. But then there's the extra feature that this place had, and a lot of these places have, and that's what you're looking at here. It's a giant Tarzan rope. And I had been told that I have to do it. You're going to be scared. It's going to look terrible. It's going to look like a terrible idea, but you have to do it, and it's going to be worth it. And so I'm thinking this whole time, it's building up to this. Am I going to do this? Am I going to do this? And I've come through the last zip line there, and the guy is looking at me, and he's asking if I'm going to take my harness off or keep it on. And he said, "I just don't know." So I kept the harness on, and I got in line, and there were about 10 people in front of me, so I had more time to just analyze, am I going to do this? Am I going to do this? And, well, I just kept going to the line. I didn't get out, and I kept putting one foot in front of the other. And before I know it, what this whole thing is, there's a couple of cables across this huge valley, and you're up probably 200 feet in the air. And so you're walking out this platform there, and you're up at the height of the rope, the top end of the rope where the rope is hanging. That's where you start. You're up at that height there. So you walk to the end of this platform there, and there's two people that are waiting for you. They strap you in, and and I told them, if you guys don't push me, I'm not going over the edge. And so what they said, should we push you lightly or should we just give you a shove? And I told them, if you don't shove me, I'm probably not going. So they're hooking me in, and they tell me to grab the rope in front of me, and I do that. And before I know it, I'm falling over the edge. And the thing is, you can see this guy has probably dropped about 75 feet already. He's still free falling. You see that rope hasn't caught him yet. So you're free falling for like 75 feet till this rope finally catches you. You get swung around, and you get swung around so fast that you end up going up again, and the rope doesn't have you anymore, and you end up free falling a little more, and you do this a bunch of times, and finally they stop you and let you get off. And I was told that after the first time, you're going to want to do it a bunch of times. I didn't do it a second time. But I was glad to check that off the bucket list and say I had done that. And but how often do we come to that point in our lives, whether it's by our own stupidity or will, or whether God leads us to a point and he expects us to just jump, take a step over the edge, and to just trust that everything's going to be okay and everything's going to work out. I don't know if you can recognize or resonate with that feeling, but that feeling of just sheer of sheer terror and sheer maybe excitement too at the same time, and nervousness, and all these things coming together. But as we look at this passage, I want to ask a few questions. The first question I want to ask is, do we serve a safe God or do we serve a good God? And I think the first part there, understanding God, that's a huge phrase in itself. Do we understand God? And I think there's so many times in our lives when we have no idea what God is doing. We don't understand. I mean, books have been filled, libraries have been filled with books of people who have wrestled with this idea of trying to understand God. And some of the biggest questions people have asked is, why? Why do bad things happen? Why do bad things happen to good people? Why does God let this happen? If he's really in control, why are these things happening to me in my life? And it just comes to this question, do we serve a safe God or do we serve a good God? And I think sometimes we have an idea of who God is and we project this idea on God, and when these things don't line up, when our idea of who God is doesn't line up with who God really is, we can end up feeling frustrated, disillusioned, even jaded. And sometimes we don't know what to do with this. So we're going to kind of go through this passage, come back to this passage throughout the sermon so you can turn to it. I think it's page 820 in the Bibles. And we'll just start reading the first number of verses here. And just look at the story of Jesus and Peter walking on the water. So we'll start Matthew 14, verse 22 to 27. And it says, immediately Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. And after he had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. And when evening came, he was there alone. But the boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. And the next, we'll read the next couple of verses as well. It says, I'm waiting for Kai here to change. I got the control. Here we go. Okay. During the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went out to them walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. It's a ghost, they said, and cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, take courage. It is I. Don't be afraid. And God shows up on the scene. I can't help but wonder if the disciples... if I were one of the disciples, I might have been thinking a few things, wondering, why, God, why didn't you show up sooner? Where have you been? Or why did you show up the way you did? And the one thing the first thing to look at here, the first question, is God a safe God? And in Mark, Mark has recounts the story as well. In Mark 6, verse 48, it says, Jesus, as he was praying on the mountainside, he saw the disciples straining at the oars because the wind was against them. The disciples had been going a long ways, had been trying to get across this lake already. They had been sent out the last evening, in the evening already, and they'd been going through the night, and they'd been battling against the wind and the waves. And at this point, they had only got like halfway across the lake. They still had a ways to go. And Jesus, he could have done many things at that point. He could have, you know, knowing they're battling against the wind and the waves, he could have said a prayer right there. He could have stopped the wind. He could have stopped the waves. He could have let them get through because they've already paid their dues. They've already gone really hard here. And he had already done this before. Earlier in Matthew, we read the story of how Jesus had fallen asleep in the boat as they're in the storm, and he calms the storm. And he's demonstrated he has power over nature. He has power over the wind and the waves. But what Jesus does, he comes out, he comes down, he comes and he meets them, he comes out to them. And not only did he not just calm the wind and the waves right there, but he waits. They had left the evening before. They had been going for a long time already. They had been straining at the oars, as Mark puts it. And it says that he waits till the fourth watch of the night, somewhere between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m. These guys have been going for a long time already. They were exhausted, I'm sure. And he waits till the fourth watch of the night, and he comes out and he peers to them. And in the meantime, they're going. They're even following his orders. They're doing what he told them to do. He had sent them ahead in the boat. He had sent them into these circumstances. And he waits till 3 a.m., 6 a.m. to come out and meet them. And I can't help but wonder if we often question God sometimes in the way he does things, in the way he answers prayers, or maybe doesn't answer, in how he seems distant, how he maybe doesn't even seem present. It's like, where are you, God? I'm going through this. You sent me on this. Where are you? What are you doing? And we wonder, we question, where are you, God? What are you doing? But God, in his sovereignty, he chooses, instead of taking away what we're going through, he comes down and he walks with us through these difficulties. And instead of being at our beck and call, instead of just answering in the way, in the time even, that we're expecting him to, he waits. He waits. He seems to be silent. He seems to be distant. I don't know if you can resonate with that, if you felt that in your life at times. I'm just asking, where are you, God? And it goes back to the question, do we serve a safe God or do we serve a good God? And sometimes I think we wish we could have both. Maybe sometimes we think it is the same thing. Sometimes we wish God was safer, God was easier, that the way God handled things would be easy. That he would meet us in the way we want him to meet him, on our timetable. But the evidence we see is that God is sovereignly in control, and God has something. He's got something up his sleeve. He knows what he's doing, even though we don't understand him. And the question is, can we trust him that he knows what he's doing when we're in the midst of trouble? And when he seems to be distant, I think we know in the bottom of our hearts that God is a good God, even though these circumstances arise and bring question to this. We know God is a good God. In Romans 8, verse 28, is a verse I love. And it says, and we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good, for those who are called according to his purpose. That there is good behind everything that happens, that God is behind all of this. And it's all working towards good. And this is not easy to see sometimes. But the scriptures are full of stories of God keeping people waiting, of God's plan of salvation. How many years, how many thousands of years did it take to from the point of where, you know, where he gives his promise to Abraham to the point where the Messiah finally comes. Even in the Old Testament, there seems to be 400 years of silence where there aren't the prophets speaking, where there's 400 years. Sometimes I get impatient with God if he doesn't show me something in a few hours or days or weeks. I can imagine waiting as the nation of Israel waiting for the Messiah. And the Bible, it's just full of stories of God working towards good, but doing it in his own way, in his own time. And proving to us that he is a good, that he is a good God. The next question I want to ask is, so we look at Peter stepping out of the boat and ask the question, in which realm are we living? And let's just look at the next two verses, Matthew 14, verse 28 and 29. And it says, "Lord, if it's you," Peter replied, "tell me to come to you on the water." "Come," he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came to Jesus. Just as we serve a God who is neither safe nor easy, as a disciple of Christ, should our lives be characterized by safety, by easiness, by comfort? I think Peter's response is very telling. Because when Jesus comes, steps into the situation, and Peter's response causes him to step into something that is radical, something different, something terrifying, something impossible, something humanly impossible. And he steps away from what is comfortable and familiar, and he steps into something unknown, something foreign. I don't think he's probably ever tried to walk on water before. And if he has, he probably got wet. Something terrifying. And the question is, should Jesus' presence in our lives lead us to safe and comfortable lives, or does it lead us to extreme, perhaps even crazy undertakings and uncomfortable situations? And the irony of the situation is, I wonder if Peter realized in that moment that the safest place he could be was with the Lord, was with Jesus, even if that meant him taking away from where he was, sitting in the comfort of his yacht, probably wasn't a yacht, but leaving the comfort of the boat and being there with Jesus. Had his faith led him to get out of the boat? His faith led him to actions and circumstances that were clearly unsafe. And we often say that the best place to be is the center of God's will, and I think we truly believe that. But sometimes when the rubber meets the road, that's not an easy place to be. So the question is, in which realm are you living? If we look at the decision that Peter made and the disciples, where do you think you find yourself? Do you find yourself one of the 11, a content bystander, observing what's going on, perhaps thinking, boy, what's Peter gotten himself into this time? Perhaps thinking, boy, Peter's bitten off more than he can chew. Perhaps you're just content to just kind of sit in the background and watch this unfold, this story that's bound to turn ugly. Or maybe you can identify with Peter in stepping out. And I wish I could say that I was a Peter, and I'm quick to step out into new situations, and I know that that's the opposite. I know that I don't enjoy feeling uncomfortable. I don't enjoy feeling nervous. I don't enjoy putting myself in situations like this. But imagine how Peter must have felt that moment as he was about to touch the water. He's put his foot out, he's landing on water, and is he expecting to be as he's touching solid land? Imagine what it would feel like to be in that Tarzan rope and to try and take that step and to know you're gonna free fall for 75 feet. Or whatever else you guys can put in your own situations and imagine what that would be like. And so let's look at the safety of the boat and what that feels like. Some words that come to mind are comfort And we think of, well, what's comfortable for you? What's your favorite chair? When you come home, you like to sit in your favorite chair. What's your comfort food? What do you turn to when you just need to relax and veg? We often talk about our comfort zone. Where is it that you feel safe? Where is it that you feel you can just be yourself? You don't need to act. You don't need to put out. You don't need to put out effort. You can just feel safe and comfortable. And granted, the boat won't have been anything close to any yacht sitting out in the marina here. But compared to Peter's mode of transportation, a pair of sandals, I think I would choose the boat. Boat any day. Some other words, the safety of the boat, in control. We like to be in control of our situation. We like to be in control of our lives. Some other words, self-reliant. We don't like to be dependent on other people. We learn this idea of dependency very young. How often do we hear kids say, I can do that, I want to do it, let me do that. Something we learn, something that's not even taught to them as children. It's something that is ingrained, hardwired into the system, this independence, that we don't want to be dependent on the people around us. We want to be able to be in control. We don't want to be independent. We take it so far in our lives. You look at the business of insurance. We have life insurance. We have car insurance. We have house insurance. We have health insurance. We have all these kinds of insurance as we're trying to control the outcome even of a bad situation. If we get into difficult situations, we still want to have some power. We still want to have control of what the outcome is going to be. And these things aren't bad, of course, but it just shows our desire to be in control. Maybe none of you are like me. Maybe you are all love to feel the opposite. Maybe you enjoy the uncertainty of walking on the water. You enjoy feeling uncomfortable. You enjoy being in comfortable situations. You enjoy feeling out of control, willingly putting yourself in situations where you have to be dependent on someone, on something else outside of you. Maybe you enjoy the feeling of helplessness. I kind of doubt it. These types of situations tend to just go against our nature, the very core of who we are. Feelings of being uncomfortable, out of control, and helpless. So the question is, in which realm are you living? Are we living our lives in the realm of this comfortable boat? Are we building for ourselves comfortable lives? Do we strive for only what makes our lives more comfortable and easy and free of anything that makes us feeling any of these other things uncomfortable, dependent, helpless? In the book of Hebrews chapter 11 I love this chapter. And they could have made this chapter so much longer. And even at the end of the chapter, the writer lists a whole bunch of names of people who have chosen to live outside of the boat, outside of what is comfortable. And just want to look at a couple of examples of that. Noah building the ark, as he's laboring to build this ark. I don't know how long it took, but this wasn't an overnight project. And so you can imagine, you know, he's building this huge ark, and he's saying, well, there's a big flood coming. And imagine how that went over in the community and how he must have felt. You look at Abraham offering his son Isaac after in a miraculous incident, Abraham's wife becomes pregnant when they're way past the age. And the son Isaac is the answer to the promise that God is going to bless him. God is going to fulfill his covenant through this son. And then God asks him to sacrifice this son. We look at Moses and the Israelites passing through the Red Sea. And then they're being chased by the Egyptians, and they're coming to the Red Sea, and they're wondering, okay, what are we going to do now? We got nowhere to go. They're coming to a dead end. But they're told to go to the Red Sea. And then at that point, it's when the waters open up and they pass through. And Gideon is just one of the men who is mentioned in the list at the end, different people who walked in faith. I think of Gideon as he's attacking the Midianites, and he's ready to go to war with 32,000 men. And how many does he end up with? 300. It doesn't say how big the other army was, but if he's coming with 32,000 men, I'm sure it was a whole lot more than 300 that he was attacking. Some estimated at over 100,000. It was a huge army, and he attacks. He goes. He's commanded to go with 300 men. None of these situations sound safe or easy in the least. And the question, it just goes back to Romans 8, verse 28. We know that for those who love God, all things work together for good, for those who are called according to his purpose. There are many who teach in Canada and the U.S., especially, and even here in Mexico, that as long as we are faithful to God, he will bless us here in this earth and bring prosperity. He will bring us wealth. He will bring us health. That these are things we can expect and we can count on as long as we are obedient to God and we are faithful to him. And now understand that God is a God who loves to give good gifts. James 1 verse 17 says, every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of heavenly lights. And I believe that especially as we walk in obedience to them, that God loves to pour good gifts, good things into our lives. But the question we need to ask and we need to understand, we need to think about is his greatest concern for our lives, does it have to do with our prosperity here on earth, whether it's wealth, whether it's health, whether it's comfort, whether it's safety? Are these the things that he is working towards? If we look at this verse and we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good, is that the good that he is working towards? And of course, I think we know the answer. We know that that's not the case. But that doesn't help from sometimes I think that we gravitate towards that. We hope for that. We hope that God would answer us in a safe way, an easy way, that God would answer us the way that he wants to. He would lead us in the way that we want him to lead us. And I think our prayers may at times betray this attitude too. I don't know if you've ever thought, God, I know you can do this. I know you have the power to do this. Why don't you do it? Why don't you bring the healing that I know you can? Why don't you? And we ask, we wonder, why does God do it? Why is God doing it? Why is he working it out in this way? But I think we all believe that God is not primarily concerned with keeping us comfortable in this life, with keeping our lives free of pain, free of trial, free of tribulation. I think you can look at Paul's life and you see the opposite. You see the extreme opposite. If you look at the list of the things that he faced, that he went through in his life. And so we have no guarantees. We have no guarantees at all. Jesus himself told us in John 16, verse 33, in this world, you will have trouble. There's no guarantees there. There's no guarantees in this life of any of those things, of ease, of comfort, of safety. But what we do have is the promises that God is a good God, that for those who love God, all things work together for good. And we know God is good. We know he has a master plan. We know that there is a brilliant master behind this plan and that he is working these things out. I believe that every person mentioned in Hebrews 11, every one of those people in their testimonies that they clung to this. And Hebrews itself starts off, Hebrews 11 verse 1, a verse that we probably all know. Now faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. Oh, getting carried away here. There we go, okay. It's clinging to that, clinging to what we can't see, but know it's there. We know God's goodness. We know he's working these things out. And I think Jesus, as we look at this question, in which realm are we living? That Jesus himself perhaps provides the greatest example of this, of stepping out into something that is completely unknown, uncomfortable, dangerous. And Philippians 2, verse 6 to 8 says, talking about Jesus, who, being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to death, even death on the cross. He didn't hold on to what was rightfully his. He had every right to stay up there. He had every right. But he chose to leave that behind and become like one of his creations. And not only that, he doesn't just stop there. He goes to the point, knowing that the purpose in his mind is going to lead him to the place of the cross. As if he hadn't already humbled himself enough, just becoming like one of his creations and walking on earth like us, he not only died, he did it in a way, in one of the most humiliating ways as possible. You know, today there's still, there's still states in the U.S. that, you know, have capital punishment, right, or the death sentence. And it's done in such a way that almost as if it's possible to kill someone humanely, it's done that way, right? It's done. But this is something totally different. This is making him a public spectacle. This is doing it in a way that is terribly painful, that must be terribly painful. I can't obviously speak from experience, but terribly painful, a long drawn-out process, being publicly humiliated. This is the depths, the lengths to which Jesus himself went, leaving behind the comfort, the security, whatever he had. And so the question is, for us, in which realm are we living? And the next question I want to ask is, with our eyes on Jesus, what is it that holds our attention? I love the verse or the song that Becky chose this morning of Be Thou My Vision, of having God as our vision. And I just want to read Hebrews 12, verse 1 to 2. This is following the whole list of all these people of faith. And it says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witness, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. And verse 2, let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. And let's contrast this with Peter's experience. And we read in Matthew 14, verse 28 and 29, and he says, Lord, if it's you, sorry, I think we've got the wrong verses here. And following this, I'll just read it. You can read it from your scriptures, or verses 30 and 31. And he says, but when he saw the wind, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried out, Lord, save me. And immediately Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. You of little faith, he said. Why did you doubt? This is the turning point here. The word but. Everything is going good. Until this happens. And maybe you can relate to this. That stepping out. Maybe you've stepped out on faith in something. And you feel like you're following God's will. You're following what he wants you to do. And then suddenly, everything gets thrown upside down. And I think it comes down to this, to the word. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid, and he began to sink. And there's a few. I think there's lots of things that have the potential to pull our eyes off of Jesus. And the first one can be the circumstances that surround us. And the interesting thing is that nothing has changed in this whole situation from when Peter chose to step out of this boat to the point when he saw the wind and the waves. Nothing had changed. Those wind and the waves were there the whole time. But the moment that his eyes come off of Jesus and he sees this and he sees what's happening around us, Peter begins to sink. And the moment we take into account perhaps the overwhelming circumstances that we're in, the moment we start to focus on those things is the moment that we can begin to sink. another thing, our own abilities and our strengths. When we take into account what we can do, there's two different things that can happen. We can take into account and think about our own abilities, and we rely on ourselves, our own abilities, and our own strengths. And we come to the point of realizing we can't do it. Or we come at it and we realize our inabilities, our weaknesses. Maybe we feel completely inadequate to what we've been called to do, to what we're supposed to do. But whether we take into account our strengths and rely on our own abilities and strengths, or whether we become paralyzed because we feel we can't do it, the effect is the same, that our focus turns away from Jesus and it turns onto ourselves. And it's at that moment that I think the stress, the weight of what we're doing can fall on us, and we can become overwhelmed, we can feel overwhelmed. Maybe another way of putting it, are we more concerned with building ourselves up in other people's eyes? Or are we more concerned about showing God and revealing Him and letting Him have the glory? Maybe another thing is the wisdom of what we're doing. If you look at the human wisdom of what Peter did, there is no wisdom in it, right? There is no human wisdom in getting out of a boat, especially in windy and wavy conditions, and to try and walk on water. This doesn't make any sense. And yet, how often does God call us into things that don't make any sense by human wisdom? If you applied this rationale to the list of people in Hebrews 11, to the list we went through, Noah building his ark, this doesn't make sense. That's a big ark. There's no lake in sight. There's no ocean in sight. What's he doing? Abraham, he's killing the son who's going to be the fulfillment of the promise of God. Moses, they're running into a dead end. Gideon, 300 versus thousands. I don't like those odds. And the next thing, another thing, perhaps it's just the fear of failure. Perhaps he suddenly realizes he's got 11 people at his back watching him. It's like, boy, that could be a little scary. What if I fail? What if people see me make a fool of myself? All of these things, often subtly, in just little ways, little thoughts that get planted into our mind, can present themselves and steal away our focus. And often they can be very innocent in their beginnings. You know, if you think about the wisdom of what we're doing, well, it's good to be responsible. It's good to think about what you're doing. It's good to plan ahead. It's good not to be reckless, right? But as we go down that path, suddenly we realize that we're overwhelmed. Suddenly we realize that we can't do what we're doing. And Ephesians 6, verse 16, I think really talks about this spiritual battle. And it says, in addition to all this, take up the shield of faith with which you can extinguish all the flaming arrows of the evil one. That standing behind this shield of faith is the only place where we can truly be safe and protected. That is Hebrews, as the first verse in Hebrews 11 says, now faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. And verse 6, later on, it says, without faith, it is impossible to please God. And without faith, it would have been impossible for any one of those men to accomplish what they were doing and to stand behind faith, to guard themselves behind the shield of faith. But thankfully, the story, it doesn't end there. It doesn't end with Peter sinking and going down to the bottom of the lake. But in that moment, he cries out to Jesus. He cries out to the Lord. His focus goes back onto the Lord, onto Him. And Jesus is there. He's there with His arm ready. And He reaches down. His hand reaches down and grabs Him and pulls Him up. And in that moment, we see in our circumstances, when we've been overwhelmed by the circumstances that surround us, that He is our focus. And in our abilities and strengths, that He is our strength. That it's not us. It's not about us. It's not about what we can do or what we can't do. In the wisdom of our doing, that He is the one we trust. that man's wisdom only goes so far, but it's God's wisdom that reigns supreme, and that we can trust him. And the fear of failure, that he is the one we seek to please. We're not trying to please the people around us. We're not trying to build ourselves up so that people think we're great or something. But he is the one we ultimately seek to please. And our focus becomes totally different when we take those attitudes on. And Psalm 93, verse 3 and 4 says, "The seas have lifted up, O Lord. The seas have lifted up their voice. The seas have lifted up their pounding waves. But mightier than the thunder of the great waters, mightier than the breakers of the sea, the Lord on high is mighty. And it's in him we put our trust, and in him we put our focus." And so as Hebrews 12 verse 2 says, "Let us fix our eyes on Jesus. Let us not let anything take our focus away from him." And the last question I want to ask, so we look a greater revelation of God, is our vision of God growing greater? If in our lives, is God becoming greater? Are we more and more leaving behind our preconceived ideas of who God is and coming to truly know him more? And is that those truths, are those truths supplanting this idea of who we think God is? And I love how this story ends, Matthew 14, verse 32 and 33, and it says, "And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. And then those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, 'Truly you are the Son of God.'" As we look at this, God is revealed. God is revealed as Lord. I think everyone in the boat came to a fuller understanding, a fuller realization of who God is. That he is an all-powerful God. He is Lord of the wind and the waves. He's Lord of these circumstances. He is able to calm the storms. He has power over all these things. He has the power to make Peter walk on water. That he is a loving God. That he was walking alongside them. That he was there with them through their struggles. That he is a merciful God. That God was right there with Peter to reach down and pull him up, even as he failed, as he doubted God. God was right there alongside. God, another thing we see, the revelation of God, that God is always in control. And finally, we see God perhaps take control of the situation that the disciples were in, the wind and the waves. Finally, as they come back into the boat, we see that he calms the wind and the waves. Now, does that mean that he wasn't in control the whole time? Does it mean that as we're walking through stuff and God doesn't answer and God isn't doing what we wish he would do, does that mean he's not in control? Sometimes it sure feels that way. Sometimes it sure feels that maybe he's indifferent, maybe he doesn't care, maybe he doesn't have this under control, maybe he missed something here, maybe he missed some details. But we know that's not the case. That whenever God decides to come and do what he wants to do, to take control, maybe as we maybe have wanted all along, that's up to him, and that doesn't in any way say that he doesn't have control, that he isn't in control. And Isaiah 55 verse 9 says, "As the heavens are higher than the earths, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts." That there's times and there's questions we have in this life that we perhaps will never understand. Often we can look back and we can see, I can see why God did this. I can see why God brought me through this. I can see. But I think there's times, there's questions we're going to have where we won't understand. And maybe on the other side, maybe when we're with him, maybe he'll give us a clear picture. Maybe he won't. I don't know. But we know either way that he's got this. He's got this in his hand. He's got this. One other thing, God is present. In Mark's version of this, as we read before in Mark 6, verse 8, as he was on the mountainside, as he was praying, he said he saw the disciples straining at the oars, that even though he wasn't physically present with them there, that he saw what was happening. And even though he didn't rush out, perhaps, and meet them there right away, he saw. And we can know that Jesus sees what we're going through. He knows what we're going through, even if he is distant or seems distant. And finally, God is ultimately glorified. The disciples cry out, "Truly, you are the Son of God." That was the exclamation of the disciples, that God alone gets the glory, that there's no room for praise for Peter, even though he is the one who took the step out of the boat. You know, even if he hadn't started doubting and he hadn't sunk down, even if he had confidently walked out there and walked up to Jesus, he didn't do it on his own strength. There is no room for praise, for glory, for Peter. It was only solely through the power of the Lord Jesus that he was able to do that. And I believe that out of the 12 disciples, that everyone walked away with a bigger vision of who God is. Every one of them. But I can't help but believe that for Peter, that vision of God grew by leaps and bounds that day. I'm sure the disciples will have been amazed at seeing this man step out of the boat and start sinking and get lifted up again. And as they walk back. But for Peter, who put himself in that situation, who was standing at that edge and ready to, he had his harness hooked in and he's ready to swing off on this Tarzan rope, as he puts himself in that vulnerable position, and God comes through in a huge way. And so, as we look at this, as we just wonder about where we are at in our lives, isn't this what our lives are supposed to be all about? Aren't they? Isn't our lives all about bringing glory and honor to God? Isn't that the reason that that God created us? He created us with this intent that we would bring honor and glory to our Creator. That we were made to magnify God. I like the word magnify. You know, if you think about a magnifying glass takes what you put in it and it makes it bigger. A definition of magnifying is to make something greater in size and importance. That as our lives are focused on God, that we do exactly that. That our lives magnify God, that God becomes greater. That God becomes greater in size and importance in our lives. And the neat thing is that as we do that, that the people around us see that. That they see God magnified. That they see God grow. In their vision, they see God grow in greater size and importance. We see him for who he is, that God reveals himself through us as we do this. I think John the Baptist really understood this. And kind of towards the end of the ministry, after he had already baptized Jesus, and some of John the Baptist's disciples were discussing this, and they came to John and they asked, "Why are our disciples leaving you, and why are they going to follow Jesus? What's going on here? Our poll numbers are going down here. This doesn't look very good." But John the Baptist, he understands, and he says, he must become greater. I must become less. And he realizes his whole purpose was to prepare the way for the Lord, to direct his life, was to point people towards Jesus. And as we do that, God becomes greater in our lives. And the people around us bear testimony to that. And the thing is that we develop patterns in our lives and we develop habits. And maybe you are a person who is a risk taker. Maybe you love to do things like jumping on, do these mega Tarzan ropes or zip lines. I think this last week, there was a story of a guy who did a skydive from, was it 37 kilometers up? He set a new world record anyways. There's people like that who are risk takers who love doing that. But there's people like me who would prefer not to do things like that. But I can't help believe that God puts us in these positions. God calls us into these situations to take our life, to take our focus off of ourselves. That God brings us into situations where we are feeling uncontrolled, we are feeling out of control, we're feeling uncomfortable, we're feeling helpless. Because as Peter was going down there, all he could do was he could cry out to the Lord, "Lord, save me." And our focus goes to him. And I think that this is what Touch San Carlos is really all about. It is moving beyond our own comfortable lives and seeking to reach out to the people around us. And that is going to often lead us into uncomfortable situations. But all of this is for God's honor and glory. In 2 Corinthians, I'm just going to close with this verse. 2 Corinthians 4 verse 7 says, "But we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that this all-surpassing power is from God and not from us." To show that our lives, to show with our lives that it is God who deserves all the power and the glory. And so I just encourage you guys to think about that as you go this week, to be opened to God. And this is not about just taking risks for the sake of taking risks. This is about following God, about hearing his voice, about responding to him, about trusting him in those situations, trusting to take those steps of faith, and trusting that he's going to be the one, that he's going to be the one who will answer. He will be the one who will be our strength, and he will accomplish in our lives what he wants to accomplish as we allow him. Let's close in prayer. God, we praise you that you are an all-powerful God. We praise you, God, and we thank you that you love us so deeply and so intimately, God, and that you don't want to leave us where we're at, God, but that you want to carry us. God, you want to be greater in our lives. You want us to have a greater vision of who you are. We praise you, Jesus. And we acknowledge, God, that often means, God, being in uncomfortable places, God. But we praise you that you are the one, Lord, who sustains us, God. You are the one who allows us to rise above, God, the wind and the waves, Lord. And we praise you for that, God. Help us, Lord. Speak to our hearts, speak to our lives, Lord, the ways in which you want us to risk our comfort, to risk these things for your honor and glory, God. And we pray this in your name, Jesus. Amen.